News at 9:06.
Say.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. By almost every academic measure you look at, girls today are doing far better than boys, from the early elementary years right up through graduate school. Twice as many boys than girls repeat kindergarten. And over the next 12 years of school, a boy is far more likely to be diagnosed with learning disabilities, to be suspended or expelled, while he's less likely to graduate at the top of his class. In higher education, these trends continue. For every 100 women enrolled in college, 78 men are enrolled. And finally, looking at all kinds of educational attainment, from an associate's degree right on up to a PhD, women today are receiving more of them. Given these numbers, it's easy to see why there's been so much talk in recent years about the boy crisis in education. But lately, the discussion has evolved into a debate over how best to approach this problem and whether it's as severe as it's often portrayed. Today in The Exchange, is our education system leaving boys behind? What do you think? Do you see our schools overlooking boys' needs these days the way they were once accused of overlooking girls? Or is the boy crisis exaggerated? Also, what's the role and responsibility of parents and other adult role models for young male achievement? And how about the boys themselves? Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests, Michael Thompson, psychologist, school consultant, author or co-author of 8 books, including the New York Times bestseller, Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys. Michael's latest is called It's a Boy, Understanding Your Son's Development from Birth to 18. And Michael Thompson, a big welcome back to The Exchange. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Laura. Nice to be back.
And also with us, Tom Mortensen, senior scholar at the Pell Institute for the Study of Opportunity in Higher Education. He looks at how various groups are faring in education and in the workforce. And Tom Mortensen, thank you also for your time this morning.
Pleased to be here.
Well, and Tom, to you first. Okay, we've read a lot about this in recent years on the cover of Business Week, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, all sorts of publications looking at this boy crisis, as they call it. How bad is it?
Well, if you're a boy that's not progressing in the education system towards the world of work, life is going to be rather brutal. The world of work for men has changed dramatically over the last century. We've been losing jobs that men were able to do based on their strength, willingness to work outdoors, dirty, dangerous, very uncomfortable situations. We're replacing those jobs with service industry jobs that require a lot of post-secondary education and training. And the boys seem to be lagging the girls, and they're certainly lagging the job market in the development of those skills for the work that the economy needs.
What do you think, Michael? How bad is it? Is it exaggerated, or is it as bad as a lot of the news covers would make you think?
It's hard to evaluate how bad it is, but it is real. In one of the things that's happened with No Child Left Behind, is the law was partly designed to reveal gaps between successful schools and failing schools and between whites and blacks and Hispanics. It's also revealed huge gender discrepancies in every state, including New Hampshire, which is above average state in its public schools achievement. But there are significant gaps in reading between your girls and your boys. Many more of your girls are more proficient. But this isn't just a New Hampshire, nor is it just an American problem. They're seeing the same problem in Australia and all over Western Europe. In all of the first world countries, girls are starting to outachieve boys academically, and they have been for about the last 25 years. And the girls keep gaining strength. It's as if the boys have been flatlined, and the girls have just zoomed past them.
Well, Michael, if we could pick at that a little bit. Okay, so are boys really, quote-unquote, falling behind, or is it that just we have finally allowed girls to reach their full academic potential? We're not putting them down anymore.
Well, that's what the debate is. We used to hobble girls, and instead of talented girls in science, we used to kind of steer them away from physics and send them into home economics. And now there are more girls taking advanced math in the United States and more girls taking advanced placement exams. So we're encouraging girls in a way that we didn't. The question is, are we discouraging boys? What's going on in schools that are making boys less well prepared for college, more, and, you know, dropping out at higher rates? And very soon we'll have a 60% graduation rate. I mean, 60% of college graduates will be young women, and only 40% young men.
Well, and I want to get into all this, both K through 12 and higher education. But one more broad question for you guys. You know, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof wrote about this last year, and he asked rhetorically, at a time when men are still hugely overrepresented in Congress, on executive boards, in the corridors of power, he asks, does it matter that boys are struggling in schools? And Tom, I'll turn to you first. What do you think?
Well, when I look at incarceration rate data, for example, suicide data, marriage rate data, men fathering children and not following through as marriage partners for mothers, I'd have to say men are disengaging from all of the traditional sorts of responsibilities that we expect men to provide in society and in the economy. I agree with Michael. It is wonderful to see the progress that our young women have made over the last 40 years. But the boys seem to be relatively clueless. You know, they're headed towards careers of working. They will work almost continuously from about age 25 through age 65. They have a 40-year working lifetime ahead of them. And the jobs that they're going to be asked to perform require ever greater levels of education and training, and they seem to be clueless about the importance of preparing themselves for that kind of world of work. We don't need very many farmers anymore. At one point, about 35% of the employment in the United States was in farming. It's now less than 2%. At one point after World War II, about 28% of the jobs in the economy were in manufacturing. It's now less than 8%. This has been traditional male work, and it's dying. We are growing jobs. We are growing jobs in education, healthcare, and business and professional services and leisure and hospitality industries, and these jobs require a lot of post-secondary education and training. And the problem is, the boys aren't preparing for that world of work.
You know, I want to ask you, Michael Thompson, also your reaction to does it matter? But real quickly, if I could, Tom, you said something interesting that I have heard parents of young men, meaning, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, say, boys are clueless. I have heard others say that about what they want to do upon high school graduation. Who's responsible for that cluelessness?
I think Michael's raised the appropriate question. I think that's the conundrum. We seem to have done a marvelous job advancing the education and preparation of our daughters, and the question is, why haven't we done a better job with our sons?
Okay, Michael, go ahead. Does it matter at a time when men are still, you know, controlling a lot of the strings of power in this country in terms of politics and business? Does it really matter that boys, okay, they're not doing as well in school as girls?
I think it does matter because a lot of boys sort of take their soul out of school. They say, this doesn't work for me. And their models of masculinity then are town sports, things that their dads come to watch them. And they kind of take themselves off the track of achievement, of places where they might, in fact, find great personal realization in the sciences and things like that. They just get turned off to school. Look, boys and girls, since No Child Left Behind, are pretty much even at fourth grade. But boys are falling behind by eighth grade. And by 12th grade, they're significantly behind in reading and writing. The average 11th grade boy in the United States writes at the level of the average eighth grade girl.
Wow, that's pretty
striking.
There's
almost a 3-year gap. Now, this is, of course, exacerbated by socioeconomic status and race. An African-American boy in Chicago who starts in the public school system there has a 3% chance of finishing college. 3% chance. I mean, that's just dreadful. And race and class, I mean, poverty is, has always been a factor in denying kids a chance for a good education. But gender is a factor, too. You're much better off being a well-to-do white girl than you are being a poor black boy.
But you see this across race and economic status. You know, white middle-class boys are also falling behind.
What's interesting is I do a lot of consulting for independent schools, as they like to be called. Most people still call them private schools. And I go to fancy schools, some of the top boarding schools in New Hampshire. I've been there, and I say, before I come to speak, I say, give me the stats on the top quarter of your class and the bottom quarter of your class. And these are all college-bound kids, but the top quarter of a class is always 70% girls and 30% boys. And the bottom quarter of the class is always 70% boys and 30% girls.
Okay, so, Michael, why is that? Why do boys, you know, after fourth grade, as you said, get turned off, to use your words, from school? How come?
Excuse me for the cough. There are lots of reasons. I've been giving a speech called 10 Reasons for Boy Underachievement. Is it we're more encouraging to girls? Is it the requirements for sitting and for homework have increased? Is it, and this is one of my prime candidates, is there so little free play for boys? I think the decline of outdoor free play where boys could make up their own games and feel competent, and they've all escaped into video games, which parents decry, but it's much more reassuring to have a boy in the cellar on a video game than outside with a group of other boys you don't know where they are. And boys' chances to display their competence and their creativity are in fact diminishing. And boys don't do as well, and they're constantly supervised by adults, which is the way it is with town teams and endless competition. So what we're saying, our message to boys is, if you really want to become a man, if you want your father standing watching you, town sports is your destiny.
All right, and we will talk a lot more after a short break and start taking your calls, so keep it right here.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the Neve Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Tupelo Music Hall presenting singer-songwriter Melissa Ferrick on Friday, May 4th in White River Junction and Saturday, May 5th in Londonderry. Tickets at tupelohall.com. More on the boys' crisis in education on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, Managing the Burden of Student Debt. New Hampshire weather, we have a flood watch in effect through this evening. For today, cloudy with rain tapering to showers, breezy, highs near 50 in the North Country, 50 to 55 in central areas of the state, near 60 in southern New Hampshire. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, chance of scattered showers, lows from mid-30s from the White Mountains north, low to mid-40s for the rest of the state. This program was recorded earlier. We won't be taking any new phone calls this morning. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the boy crisis in education and the startling statistics that show boys and young men falling behind academically from kindergarten right on up through graduate school. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think we're seeing this phenomenon? Is it that schools overlook boys' needs these days the way they were once accused of overlooking girls? Or do you think this boy crisis is exaggerated? Also, who's responsible for it? What about parents, other adult role models, teachers, and the young men themselves? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Give us your thoughts, observations, personal experiences. You can email us, too, at exchange@nhpr.org. And Michael Thompson, Tom Mortensen, let's go to our callers now. And David is calling in from where? Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, in summary, I've been involved with the public schools for about 3 or 4 years now. I came to education as a experienced engineer, so I had about 20 years experience in industry prior to becoming getting involved with teaching. And so I came out of you know, how would you say it, a very technically minded discipline, and then became a teacher, which I love, okay? My opinion is that after teaching physical science, I taught physical science for a couple of summers and in my local school district, and so I had the pleasure to teach young boys and girls who maybe had not achieved fully during the school year. And what I found was that once we started engaging and learning about things that were practically minded and things of interest to them, they just lit up.
What kinds of things, David?
Excuse me?
What kinds of things, like how things work, how an engine works, or
exactly.
Physics?
Yes, Laura. Albeit when we talked about things that went boom.
Explosions.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point, David, then? What's the message or the lesson for our schools, given your experience? More explosions in class?
Yes, they have to find things that the kids are passionate about. If they don't have a passion, if they have a passion for something, and if you turn that passion into a passion for learning, that's the connection.
When I was in
physical science this past year, in a fully integrated class, level twos through level fours, when the level twos got engaged in things like engine repair,
mm-hmm.
you know, what makes an engine work? You know, you've got spark, you've got gasoline, you've got things that roll, things that move. And the guys that I met in the engine repair class were the same guys who are having a rough time in phys science.
Right. You know, thank you so much for calling, David. Tom Mortensen, what do you think? This is a point that others have made about engaging not just what interests girls, but what might be more interesting to boys. Also gets to the point that vocational education has been cut in many schools. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I've always said that if you want to keep boys engaged, things either have to blow up or fall apart or go very, very fast, or you have to put them back together again. You have to assemble something. In other words, boys have to do things. I'm terribly impressed with girls' ability to control themselves in the classroom, the discipline they impose on themselves. And I don't think it's really natural for boys to act in this particular way. I want to point out, too, Michael's data confirms something else that I'm seeing in other kinds of data, that these issues with boys begin to emerge in the middle school grades. And I've often thought that this is probably related to the onset of puberty. But in any case, if we're going to keep boys on an education track, we really have to figure out what's going on in the middle school grades to keep them engaged in learning. And I like very much David's suggestions that it has to be sort of hands-on and practical and active.
You know, to you also, Michael, there's been a lot written. Our caller raises it. You said it earlier, how the classroom emphasis on sitting quietly, writing, reading, doesn't fit with boys' need for excitement and activity or explosions, as David, our caller, said. But, Michael, classrooms have always been sort of quiet places, even 25, 30 years ago when boys were supposedly excelling over girls. So is that really a factor, or is there something else going on?
Well, I think that's what we're all trying to figure out. I think there's some subtle things going on. One is that we've been losing male teachers in middle school. The number of men teaching middle school has dropped all over Western Europe.
So there used to be more?
These same effects.
There used to be more male teachers? Because it seems to me women have always dominated teaching.
They always have in elementary school. And most men who teach are in high school.
Uh-huh.
There's only one in nine elementary school teachers is a man. I go to elementary schools where there's no man on staff except the custodian. And, of course, the kids love him because he's got a hammer and keys and does something useful. But I want to pick up on David's thing about explosions. The research suggests that boys like to do something that produces a product that is public. Handing in a paper and getting a grade from your teacher doesn't mean that much to boys. So, you know, boys hate Shakespeare until you have them act out a scene, preferably with some swords. And they'll do a scene that's a public exhibition. And the science teachers have a lock on this because they can produce explosions and a satisfying outcome. But other teachers can do it too by, instead of a vocabulary review with everybody sitting at your desk, you do it as a team that competes, and it's public. But there has been in the last 20 years in schools such an emphasis on cooperation, and boys like competition, even if they're going to lose.
Oh, absolutely.
Girls are better at word retrieval than boys are. They're faster at it, and that's been demonstrated. But boys would rather be in a competition they lose than have no competition at all. There's a book I'm recommending to teachers by a psychologist and the head of a boys' school. It's called Reaching Boys, Teaching Boys. And they asked 1,500 boys in boys' schools in 8 countries, what's your favorite lesson from your teacher? And the boys sent them in, and they involve movement, teamwork, a product, and competition.
All right. Well, thanks again for that call, David. Great points. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Ian's joining us from Littleton. Hi, Ian. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I enjoy your show. I'm calling because I have read Raising Cain. It was a required reading in one of my classes in the UNH Education Department, and I also took a class there called Growing Up Male in America. And it was an interesting class because, you know, I never really thought about it. You know, that boys are being marginalized, because you always hear that, you know, throughout the years that girls have been marginalized and but are making a comeback. So it's interesting to hear the comments of the guests and other callers. And my main thing was that I agree boys need to be engaged more in competitive things and activities, because, you know, the other activities kind of they just sit back or they act out and aren't really, you know, participating in a full and a way that they can, you know, get the most out of the education experience. And me, I'm going to be a French teacher, but in my interning, you know, I found that activities where it was a competition, the boys who would do nothing in the classes all, you know, just jumped up and were, you know, trying to, you know, compete against everybody else. So I think that sort of an activity that engage boys will get them, you know, into all facets of education.
You know, Ian, let me ask you a quick question, because you said you're going to teach French, right?
Yeah.
That's real interesting, because it seems to me that the vast majority of people who are teaching French or taking French as a major are girls. Am I correct?
You would be. I found myself to be one of the few males in the classroom.
Right, right. What do you think about that?
It's kind of strange that, you know, humanities and arts are being, you know, marginalized a little bit too, as far as, you know, outlets for boys to, you know, learn something and, you know, experience the world. And this year I'm going to be interning in France, actually, and so it'll be interesting to see how boys are performing there. And it's going to be middle school age kids, so I'm kind of excited about that and interested to see, you know, the comparison between the two education systems.
Right, and as we've heard, you know, this is a trend we see across Western Europe. Ian, good luck to you in France. Have a blast,
right,
and thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. You know, gentlemen, two things come out of Ian's question for me. Tom Mortensen, first of all, the idea that boys are not encouraged, as he said, to go into the arts and humanities. Communications is supposedly the wave of the future, but boys are not traditionally settling themselves in disciplines surrounding communications.
I am not an expert on this, so I'm going to have to rely on the stories I hear from teachers and from people who work in all-boys schools. I follow rather closely an all-boys school in Southern California, and I'm amazed at the engagement of high school boys in their poetry class.
Really?
It's an all-boys class. It's a male teacher, and the boys produce and read poetry for each other, and I am told by people who have observed this class that the boys are deeply engaged in it. I sometimes wonder if in co-educational environments that the verbal advantage of girls does intimidate boys or leave boys at a disadvantage. And one of the if that is the case, then segregating the sexes in classes might liberate some boys, at least, from that constraint.
Single-sex education, then. A vote for that, Tom, at least in some classes?
I want to say I think the verdict is still out on that. There's some advantages to it. I think there are disadvantages to it, single-sex education also.
You know, and another thing that Ian's call brings up for me, and I'll ask you, Michael, you know, Ian said he was able to get boys engaged, adding an element of competition. David talked about, you know, science classes where things explode and so forth. And you talked about making things activity oriented and exciting. But here's the other side of that, Michael. All right. Life is not always exciting. Life is kind of sometimes can be boring. Your job may not include, you know, thrilling elements every day. As I sometimes say to my boys, you know, look, sometimes schoolwork is boring. Life isn't a video game. Are we in danger, Michael, of over-catering to these boys' need for entertainment and excitement? And then they get into the real world and they go, darn, this is dull.
No, you're right. We should bore children in school. Because,
you know what I'm saying, though?
Life is boring, so we should prepare them for that. No, Laura, it's not the right logic. And look, girls don't like boring classes any better than
no,
boys.
And I'm not saying let's make
them
boring, but, you know, do we need to cater so much to this need for excitement and entertainment, you know, 24-7?
Yes, we do.
Really?
There are reasons, because we have a different generation of learners now who've been on screens since their mother had been handing them their cell phones with games on them from when they were before younger than 2 years old. 50% of moms who have cell phones are handing them to small children below the age of two to play with. So kids are used to a lot of interaction, and they're used to instant feedback. We get boys to do much more homework if we could put it online and they have levels, and it went ding, 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 you can stop your homework now, you've achieved it, or you can move up a level and get extra credit. I think teachers are way behind kids.
And I have seen some teachers do that.
In terms of mobilizing technology in the classroom.
Right. But go ahead. So you're disagreeing with the premise that, look, life isn't a video game and get used to it.
What I'm saying
I'm putting you on the spot, Michael.
We have different kinds of learners. But what I'm interested in is, can boys feel that they can reach their destiny as men in school? Little boys, from my point of view, which is as a psychologist, are interested in constructing masculinity, being a strong boy, being seen as a competent, powerful boy. And school makes them feel bad a lot of the time, pinned down and bad. And like it's the girls are good at stuff and we won't do it. And so many boys start to outsource academic achievement to the girls.
The girls have good handwriting.
The girls take notes. I mean, we do other stuff. The reason for a single-sex environment for boys, and I'd like to see more single-sex classes in middle school, just at the time boys start to tank. I'd like to see more single-sex English classes and writing classes where boys could write their science fiction and their adventure stories and their shoot-'em-up stories because they're writing. But instead what they get is teachers who want them to write in journals. And every boy recognizes that a journal is actually a diary, and you're supposed to write about your feelings, and it annoys them.
Let me take another call. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. To Plymouth, Angie's been waiting. Hi, Angie. Thanks for hanging on, and go ahead.
Good morning. I teach middle school reading and writing, and so the comment that you just made about seeing single-sex classrooms, I would love to see as well. But I would like to say, at this age, you do often see the boys not performing as well in the reading and writing areas. And my son, who is in fourth grade, struggles with reading and writing himself, and he has completely changed my teaching, watching him go through school. And I see some things that students absolutely must have, or boys must have. They really need relevancy in learning. They want to know why they're learning, what it has to do with the real world. and they want choices and how they can show what they know, just like you were saying with the writing. If they can write a science fiction story, then let them write a science fiction story. And they also want technology put in their hands, and they need to move. They need to be allowed to stand during class. They need to be allowed to hand out papers, get out of their seats. They need that motion.
You know, what do you think, Angie, given that you're a middle school reading and writing teacher, so I'm really glad you called. What do you think about the fact that schools today have less recess, less physical education? You know, you don't have gym every other day like you used to. How has that affected boys' learning?
Well, I'm fortunate that I teach at a school where we do still have quite a bit of PE and recess time for our students. But I know on the weeks when we don't have recess because of rain, we certainly have increased discipline issues.
So you don't have a gym. Kids can't burn off their energy the weeks that it rains, you said.
No, just because of the schedule. The lower grade kids are usually in there at that time. But the boys themselves will come to class and say, we need to move. They can feel it. They feel that pent-up energy.
What do you say to other teachers who teach middle schools, women teachers like you, Angie, about engaging boys at this critical time?
Well, have a son, because that definitely helps.
Right.
but I think the motion and the relevancy are really the most important things. Even if, I mean, I have boys who come in and they just stand during class when I'm giving notes. And as long as they're in the back of the class where they're not blocking anybody's view, they really appreciate that, that they don't have to sit in their seat the entire time. It's too long.
I'm thrilled to hear you talk about this.
This is Michael talking.
This is the voice of experience.
I'm sorry?
When I walk into a classroom and I see boys standing in the back, I know the teacher's gotten it. When I see bored, angry boys sitting in the back row, spacing out, I know the teacher hasn't gotten it.
All right, more after a short break. Angie, thank you so much for joining us. Our number here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And when we come back, more of your phone calls, so stay with us.
Nowadays, science and religion do daily battle.
The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown blew that battleground wide open.
Both vying to be that infallible source from which we draw our truth.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Join Dan and me at the Music Hall in Portsmouth on May 18th. Tickets and information for this special benefit for writers on the New England stage are at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Lexus Hybrids, now with five models, including the CT with a combined EPA-rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More at Lexus.com. And Hearing Solutions New England, where audiologists diagnose hearing loss and dispense hearing aids in Nashua, Manchester, Concord, and online at HearingSolutionsNE.com. New Hampshire weather, we have a flood watch in effect through this evening. For today, cloudy with some rain tapering to showers, breezy, highs near 50 in the North Country, 50 to 55 in the central areas of the state, near 60 in southern New Hampshire. Then tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, chance of scattered showers, lows from the mid-30s from the White Mountains north, low to mid-40s in the rest of the state. This program was recorded earlier. We won't be taking any new phone calls this morning.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at what's often called the boy crisis in education, measuring how boys are falling behind academically, and we're looking at some ideas on tackling this trend. Let's hear from you, too. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Tom Mortensen and Michael Thompson. And gentlemen, I want to bring another voice briefly into our conversation. We're joined now by Rosalind Chait Barnett. She's a senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University, co-author of Same Difference: How Gender Myths Are Hurting Our Relationships, Our Children, and Our Jobs. Rosalind, it's nice to have you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
So you've written that the boy crisis is a myth. How come?
Well, we would call it a sunboy crisis.
Some boy crisis.
Not, you know, that all boys are the same. And if you unpack the data on boys, in general, you find some very interesting and important distinctions. So, for example, if you think about high school graduation rates, that if you're looking at white students, boys and girls, there are very few differences in graduation rates. But if you look at racial groups and look at the difference between white and blacks or white and Hispanics, you have huge differences. So, for example, among 18 to 21-year-olds, the gender gap in graduation rates is 1.6%. But the gap in racial groups is between whites and Hispanics is 14.7%, and between whites and blacks is 7.4%. If you unpack the boy-girl thing further and look at not only race, but race by class, you find additional important big gaps. So I think the question here is the issue. We've kind of gotten a narrow focus on gender per se, when the real make headway understanding what's going on, you need to look much more broadly, and you find out that it's boys, particularly boys in minority groups who are in under-resourced school districts, that are falling behind. But it's not a problem that one can note in a lot of data on this among white middle-class students.
Gosh, you know, other researchers, and I'm sure you know this, say that this boy trend does exist across boundaries of race and class. No one's arguing that minority boys are not worse off, but that you do see it in Western Europe, in America, that even white middle-class girls are doing better than white middle-class boys. They're getting the grades, they're getting the recognition.
Well, a lot depends on what you decide to look at, for starters. I mean, the data are very malleable, and you can do a lot with the data. It's certainly true that girls, if you think about now college, girls admission to college have gone up remarkably, but it's not because their gain doesn't mean a loss for boys. That more boys are now graduating from high school than ever before, and those numbers are projected to increase. And boys and girls are increasing their admissions or applications to college, but girls' rate of growth is greater. So as an important report came out not that long ago, it said the real story is not bad news about boys doing worse. It's good news about girls doing better, and that's really important. I think the way these arguments somehow come out, it's a zero-sum game, that if girls are winning, the boys are losing. In fact, if you look at the data over time, you find that the trend lines for boys and girls is increasing education. The rate of increase, however, for girls has been greater.
You know, you talked about the racial and economic disparities, and the Bush administration's answer to that was No Child Left Behind, an effort to not let schools off the hook when it comes to pulling up the achievement of all students, even those coming from the most disadvantaged backgrounds. Was that the way to approach this, Rosalind? What do you think?
Well, it's a very complicated topic.
It's a whole week worth of shows, I know, but I just wonder what your reaction is, since you're so concerned about that.
The issue isn't just about testing. There's many more issues. One question has to do with the amount of resources allocated to schools. I've been to many schools where the number, especially inner city schools, you have difficult kids who don't have English being spoken at home, who have parents who aren't necessarily at home, and the school becomes a place for them to learn, but the student ratio, teacher ratios is high, and the resources are low as well. But let me pick this up because there was a very important, I thought, interview in the New York Times a year or so ago with the principal of a school in New York in a very poor district. Is something like 80% of the kids qualified for free lunches. And he came into the school with a very different philosophy, which was he brought in speech therapists, he brought in occupational therapists. By the way, the total per cost for kids was lower than average. But his point was to not look at gender at all, but look at each kid's needs and to cater their teaching to that child. And he has, according to the Times, one of the best performance ratings of any school in New York, including those in very high-income districts. So I think it's the approach to the educational mission, not just about test-taking, but getting the kids where they are, looking at what their needs are, not worrying about whether the gender thing is the key thing. It's, any boy or any girl can need special attention.
Well, and it's tough, and I hear other teachers saying the same thing, look at each child's individual needs, and boy, costs money.
Right.
Well, listen, we will let you go for now, but lots to explore perhaps in a later show. Thank you very much, Rosalind.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Rosalind Chait Barnett, again, senior scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Real quick to you, I think, Tom Mortensen, she's saying, look, don't look at gender. Look at what each child needs, boy or girl. What do you think, Tom?
Well, she's clearly correct that these disparities are greatest among some of the minority groups, in particular blacks. And at the end of the education pipeline, we're graduating about twice as many black women with bachelor's degrees as we are black men with bachelor's degrees. But the differences are very much less when you start to look at whites, Hispanics, Native Americans, and Asians. Males are still about 43-44% of the degrees conferred across all of these groups, and it's actually even true in New Hampshire. I was looking at the New Hampshire data. I see in the most recent year there are about 3,800 degrees awarded to men and about 5,100 bachelor's degrees awarded to women in New Hampshire, and I don't think New Hampshire is characterized as a state with a high minority population. It is appropriate to disaggregate the data. That's what analysis is. We try to isolate problems and treat them individually. But there's also this overarching problem of males. It shows up in other ways with very high suicide rates. Boys have about five times as high a suicide rate as girls do in the 18 to 24-year-old age range. And this is mainly a white problem. And I don't think we can deny that whites are somehow, or we can say that whites are somehow exempted from this gender problem.
Given what you see in terms of all degrees of higher education conferred, what did you say, about 60-40? That's the breakdown?
A little closer to 43% male, mm-hmm. about 57% female. It's much less at the first professional and PhD level, but the women have at least caught up with men at that level, and I think at least at the PhD level we'll move past men in the next 2 years.
And let's take another call. This is Matt in Keene. Hi, Matt. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that there's a real lot of reasons why boys are falling behind, but I think the main reason really is the lack of good male role models. You can't, you know, read a magazine or watch a TV report without talking about how, you know, dads and other male figures just aren't there. And then you look at the media and how adult males are portrayed. For the most part, it's, you know, folks, guys that don't really like their jobs, that are just getting by, and the only thing that they've got to look forward to is playing golf and drinking beer on the weekend. And if that's all you got to look forward to, why bother to excel?
So broader societal stuff, not just the schools, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, Michael Thompson? Matt, thanks a lot.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that Matt's right. And, I mean, the TV ads that show men as sort of attenuated adolescents and drinkers and sports-focused, and it's as if their wives or their mothers. They look after the house. They're responsible, and the men are always dying to be irresponsible. We've had 20 years of nitwit dads on sitcom shows who act like big boys. We're not providing a lot of grown-up models for boys. Where I disagree with Matt is that we do have role models, but they're mainly athletic. And I like a lot about good coaching and good teamwork, and I think coaches have a channel into boys' hearts, but we know that fathers who go to school for other events, who go to PTA meetings, are going to have boys who are going to get higher grades. So boys are watching, what is it that really matters to my father and the other men in my life?
Very.
What do they get excited about? What do they come to watch me in? That matters to boys because they're all looking for what will make me a man.
You know, Matt, thanks a lot for that call. It's a great, great question. Here's an email that we got from someone who didn't want to give his name, but he said, this is responding to what we talked about, engaging boys in the classroom earlier. He said, boys need to be taught with explosions and weapons. He said, how condescending. What do you think, Michael?
Oh, please. Boys have, since time immemorial, have liked hunt-and-chase games and wrestling games.
by school age, three quarters of the boys in the class are more physically active and less developmentally mature than girls of the same chronological age. Any elementary school teacher can tell you that. That's science, but it's also everyday observation. So I went back to a boys' school, an old boys' school that I attended as a boy. And they didn't allow any war games at recess. They didn't allow any gunplay. Everything was in lockdown. And I said, ease up on them. Let the boys play what they want to play at recess. And I've checked back for 3 years now, and the teachers say it was hard for them to allow it. But they said the boys are happier. They're in less combat with the teachers because they're able to play the kinds of games that they want.
Although you can understand the nervousness given, school shootings and all that.
Everybody assumes that writing about violence or play violence leads to real violence. There is no scientific connection between the play that boys like, and real violence. But everybody in elementary schools thinks they're doing serious violence prevention. They're not. What they're doing is teaching boys that their boys aren't much liked at school.
That their play is going
to be constantly interrupted.
And that their way of approaching play and imagination is wrong.
That's right.
Let's take one more gentleman if we could. This is Pam and Keene. Hi, Pam. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I just watched a video yesterday, Freakonomics, and they were talking about incentives to get ninth graders interested in school. And there were boys and girls. And the University of Chicago apparently is sponsoring a program where they pay students to do well in school, to get grades of C or better, giving them $50 for that marking period if they achieve that goal. And ultimately, they could go into a drawing to receive more money than that. They followed two kids. One, by the end of the school year, had met that goal and was able to go into the drawing. The other one's grades actually went down. One was a black boy, one was a white boy. And I was outraged that they would actually be paying kids to get minimum grades of C's in school. It just upset me very much to think that the carrot would only have to continue to get bigger and bigger. Why not try to get A's?
Well, Pam, now, is there something related specifically to boys, or is this more just the idea that you don't like the idea of kids being paid no matter what their gender?
I think no matter what their gender, but what I could tell is that it's a higher population of boys that this affected. They were following specifically two boys through this program that I watched.
Okay.
And it was very disturbing to think that we have to pay kids to, do what they should be in school, like do your homework, behave in class, and, when's it going to end? The carrot can always just continue to be getting bigger and bigger. I work in an elementary school, and I can say that if I give a kid a sticker, in a couple of days they're going to say, can I have two?
Right, right.
And, can I have more than that, and I need extra recess. Now, it always is more and more and more. They need, they want to know, what do I get out of it?
Pam, thanks a lot for calling in. Tom Mortensen, what do you think about Pam's call?
I don't think there's any substitute for making education exciting and engaging. We really have to try to light the fire of the passion for learning. And you do that by making school interesting. I don't think paying people is going to be the solution. There's another issue, though, that nobody else has brought up, and I'd like to just mention that. Several years ago, I spoke at Boston Latin at an international conference of all-boys schools. And much to my amazement, I learned that it is common knowledge in all boys' school that the average classroom temperature is 10 degrees colder than it is in a co-ed classroom. That sort of makes sense to me, that boys need a little bit cooler environment to stay alert. But I've never heard that practiced anyplace other than in all boys' schools.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that either. Let's take one more. Mark in Hanover. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to push Laura's question a little bit about caring too much to these boys as educators and adults. And what I hear is that there's a growing separation between our conception of male gender with, power, strength, activity, traditional understanding and their actual experience, which is increasingly inactive and passive in boys, you know, in terms of engagement gains. And even at the adult level, with the increase in the service sector and the decrease in industrial jobs requiring, physicality, in general, more boys and men are both sitting in front of their screens. So my comment is, instead of bringing the physicality back to the conception of gender, why can't we change that schema? I mean, for example, one of your guests mentioned kids don't want to write in journals. Boys don't want to write in journals because they have the understanding and connection with it, with the diary. Well, you know, men and boys used to write in journals. And what I'd like to see us do as a culture, as educators, is embrace the intellectual life.
Gotcha. And Mark, I'm so sorry to cut you off there, but I think I got your point. In the interest of time, I do have to let you go. Michael Thompson, what do you think? You know, major societal shifts in how we define what it means to be a man.
Well, there are a lot of people who've grappled with this. Is the role of manhood changing, and are men just disoriented and confused? And we're all spending much more time in front of computers. All I know is that when I went to a boys' school in Toronto, and I went to a class that was teaching research methods to fifth-grade boys, and it was a very sophisticated four-step process for doing research, they had boys standing in front of their computers, working in pairs, and allowing them to talk and even shout in excited ways about what they were doing. And I just thought it was a wonderful way for boys to do research, standing in front of their computers, working in pairs. And I said to the woman teacher who was running the computer lab, I said, you have a high tolerance for noise.
All right. And we'll leave it at that. And Michael Thompson and Tom Mortensen, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it. Lots to talk about today. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our